You know, I'm not one to make a big deal out of all different weather patterns. And we talk about that a lot here on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett, about the ways in which weather is playing out all the time, and what are some of the unusual ways that we don't often see, you know, and whether or not that's an indication of global warming. And then if there is global warming, then is it man-made global warming? All of those questions come up from time to time on this show. And I'll just say this, what it's indicative of, I don't know. But here in the upper Midwest, we're used to getting some serious storms. We're kind of where I sit on the very upper end of Tornado Alley. And we hadn't gotten even so much as one great thunderstorm, where I live anyway, all year long. And I say great, meaning that I know that there are people who are killed during thunderstorms, and I'm not suggesting that that's awesome or anything. It's not. But I do think thunderstorms themselves are awesome and amazing to behold. And I always hate to see them end in tragedies, but I just love storms. I just can't get around it. I love a great thunderstorm. And there hadn't been one, really, all year long. And then suddenly, just in the last couple of days, we've gotten two back-to-back major storms. I wasn't even quite sure that I was going to be able to make it on the show tonight. As we had, you know, tornado warnings and sirens going off, and I wouldn't even be surprised, although I think we're pretty clear, but the way that the air has been so unstable lately, whether you might even end up hearing, while I'm on the air, a tornado siren in the background. I live about, several blocks, but within an easy earshot of one of those tornado sirens, so it could happen. If it does, I'll jump up and shut the window and hopefully be able to blot out some of it. But there's only a small chance I'll have to get to my basement in the middle of the show. And I don't want to miss a minute of the show. David Sirita's on. He's got a new DVD out about quantum communications. And it's not just about what our abilities are, but how long people have known about our abilities, both within the government and within academia, and how much of this information has been suppressed over the years. And there would seem to be a lot of indications that major funding has been provided by taxpayers over the years to prove just what our minds are capable of doing. And then that information was so scary that the government decided not to release it. David Sirita will talk about that coming up next hour, and we'll get into some very interesting opportunities for you and your brain tonight on Coast to Coast. That's starting next hour. This hour, however, we've got some special guests, and I'll talk about that when we get to crypto news next with Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, you know, I'm going to get a couple of interesting photos coming up on my blog tonight at coasttocoastam.com. I'll get that at the bottom of the hour. Photos sent by our friend Captain Kelly Sweeney, and those will be exclusive to us. I think they're cool. We'll tell you more about that and some other photos that are going to be at coasttocoastam.com in just a minute. First, let me just give you some crypto news for this evening, and by doing so, set up our special guests for this hour on Coast to Coast. No written piece could do justice to the high strangeness of the UFO video being analyzed in armchairs all throughout Britain. You've got to see this for yourself. If you go to coasttocoastam.com, you can see this story. It's about a UFO mystery that has been sparked after a flashing light was spotted on the BBC breakfast television show, like our Good Morning America or something. Viewers watched in amazement as the white probe-like object appeared on the Look North morning show. The UFO was captured on a webcam on Tuesday after it passed over the Gateshead Millennium Bridge. Viewers spotted the object when pictures from the weather camera were used as a backdrop on the breakfast show behind the news anchor Colin Briggs. This, according to The Sun UK, former Ministry of Defense UFO investigator Nick Pope said, "At first I thought it was a bird, but the slowed down footage seemed to rule this out. It's an intriguing film and a genuine mystery." There's a little of that going around these days. We'll tell you more about one from America in just a second. But I will say we've got Nick Pope coming up in just a few minutes on the air with us. Nick Pope live from England to talk about this intriguing video. So you have time to go to coasttocoastam.com, look at the video, and know exactly what we're talking about. I'll put the link up on my blog later on, too. But, you know, this is it's pretty cool, whatever it is. And we'll see what the latest is from Nick Pope on this in just a few minutes. 4,400 miles away, there are some other signs, if you know what I mean. NBC2 TV out of Fort Myers reports a family is scared to go out at night because of what they say is lurking in the woods. They claim more than five alien encounters in the last 4 months have taken place. Now an international UFO organization wants to crack the real-life X-File. Michael Rowley and his son Shane moved to the Northport home that they live in April. Quote, well, I'm retired and I thought this is where you're supposed to go, Michael said. The only bad part is the aliens around here. Maybe that's how the local Floridians feel about snowbirds, too. But anyway, Shane, who's 16, says he's had several extraterrestrial encounters, most of which have been through his bedroom window. Quote, they kind of show up when they want. You get used to them, but it is weird to see them walking around the woods with those big eyes, his son said. I haven't seen the wings, but we know he flies, adds the father, Michael. The Rowley's Twilight story has the attention of MUFON. The group is investigating. Michael believes that they will not show up if cameras are around, however. He says the plaster cast of a footprint is his key evidence. And while it might be hard to see, Michael believes the creature has a cloven hoof. It's about this big, he says, with pure deep red eyes. It looked at me for a second, Michael said. Michael admits to rarely going out at night, but he says he believes they come in peace and that they're here for a reason. I'm a combat Vietnam vet, he said, and I don't wake up until something good is going on. And this is something big and good going on. The family expects another alien encounter during the next full moon. You can expect an update in a month from us, but we actually have Michael Rowley, the father of this household, coming up a little bit later on this hour. And Nick Pope has agreed to stick around as the British Fox Mulder. He will ask the questions along with me of Michael Rowley later on this hour on Coast to Coast. So stick around for Nick Pope in just a few minutes, and then we'll both take a look at this story out of Florida. New Scientist had an interesting article this week about some other mysteries that may not be as sexy as the ones we're talking about, but still interesting, like the human tendency to blush or laugh. Like, why do we do that? What's the biological reason? Or for that matter, to pick one's nose. This remains ultimately unexplained, New Scientist says. I don't know about the biological purpose of blushing or laughing, but I think these scientists are missing the obvious explanation about nose picking. What else are you supposed to do at a red light, right? I mean, there was no nose picking before there were red lights, correct? I think so. I think that's when it started. One of the more persistent and deadly cryptozoological mysteries might get some new data, too, and I've linked this up at coasttocoastam.com with my blog, which I'll get a little bit later on this hour. Armed with explosives, two men are heading to Mongolia's Gobi Desert to find the fabled acid-spitting, lightning-throwing Mongolian death worm. The worm has never been documented, but some Mongolians are convinced it exists. They call it, they have a name for it, intestine worm, because it resembles a cow's intestine and it is about 1.5 meters long, or about 5 feet. The worm apparently jumps out of the sand and kills people by spitting concentrated acid or shooting lightning from its bum over long distances, according to this report. New Zealand TV entertainment journalist David Ferrier, who's organizing the expedition, is to leave this week with some other help to get to 2 weeks in the Gobi trying to verify the worm's existence and make a documentary about it. If a Mongolian says they've seen a big worm-like creature out in the desert, they really haven't got a reason to lie, Ferrier said. I think it won't be a worm. Obviously, a worm can't survive in a desert. I think it would be some sort of snake, that's not meant to be there. It's very out of place and a bit new. So kind of maybe, you know, an eel of some sort, like a land eel, electric land eel. There have been several unsuccessful expeditions in the past, some of which had used night vision goggles to look for the Mongolian death worm. However, this new New Zealand team planned to bring the worm to the surface with explosives, as it is said to be attracted to tremors. Tremors, you know, like the movie. Funny, I was just thinking about that word while I was reading the story. The expedition ought to call Kevin Bacon and see if he's available. He could come along for some star power. I know he's taken out a lot of new projects after he lost all of his money to Bernie Madoff. Speaking of five-foot worms. Scary work. Of course, just like the movie King Kong, even getting where the monsters are can be pretty scary. And I put on my blog here coming up photographs from the bridge of a commercial ship caught in a typhoon. Our friend Captain Kelly Sweeney had a buddy who was on this ship, took a couple of photos using a digital camera, sent them to Kelly, who sent them to me, and I'll put them up on the blog from Chief Engineer Larry B. Larry. And I hope Larry B. Larry be not so seasick as I am looking at these photographs. It's amazing with this wave just breaking over the front of the ship, and we'll get that up coming up in just a few minutes. Finally, did you see the story of the Los Angeles man on vacation in Ocean City, New Jersey, stopped in for a tarot card reading on the boardwalk? But born-again Christian card reader June Mitchell's dire prediction about her client's hereafter led to a big public story, a fight, a police investigation, and now a petition drive, according to the press of Atlantic City. June Mitchell told client Jamie Cohen, 22, who is gay, that he was going to hell. Cohen stormed out without paying her the $20. That's when things got weird. According to the news account, Cohen returned to retrieve his cell phone. Oh, man, don't you hate when that happens? You get in a big fight, you forget to go back and get your wallet or whatever. Anyway, he says that that Mitchell ordered him out of the store and in front of a crowd used an anti-gay slur. June Mitchell says that she had not meant to offend him. Quote, I wanted to make him happy, she says. As a born-again Christian, the woman admits her religious doctrine opposes homosexuality. So you just, you know, you got to love a story like that. The only thing better than the born-again Christian tarot card reader surprised that his gay client was not happy when he was told he was going to go to hell is that the man has to go back and get his phone after stiffing her the $20. That's just awkward all the way around, isn't it? But that's not the best part. The Bible never says that gay people are going to hell, right? Not any more or less than straight people. Not once. Doesn't say it anywhere. Her church might say it, but, you know, they're kind of inserting that into the Bible. Meanwhile, this born-again Christian tarot card reader apparently hasn't read Leviticus 20:27. A man or a woman who is a medium or a necromancer shall surely be put to death. They shall be stoned with stones, which is always better than being stoned, you know, with carrots or something. And their blood shall be upon them. Or perhaps the born-again Christian tarot card reader might want to take a look at Exodus 22:18. You shall not permit a sorceress to live. Now, of course, I'm not saying she's a witch, and I'm absolutely not suggesting that any harm should come to her. I'm just saying that if the rest of her congregation reads the Bible as carefully as she does, she might want to consider moving from her glass house. Anyway, we'll leave the rest of the internet to settle, and we won't get to any open lines this hour because Nick Pope is standing by before we get to David Sirita, our guest next hour on quantum communications, who says it's all in our mind. And what's all in there? You don't even know the third of it yet. We'll talk about that coming up next hour. In the meantime, it's kind of hard. Nick Pope, I was trying to describe you tonight to a friend on the radio, and I said you're kind of the Art Bell of England, but that's only because you're sort of the face and voice of UFO investigation. I think probably Britain's Fox Mulder is probably the better description because you actually held an official position as a UFO investigator within the Ministry of Defense. Isn't that right?
That's correct, yes. I worked for the Ministry of Defence, the UK equivalent of your DOD, for 21 years. And for 3 years in the early 90s, I had a job there where my duties included looking at the UFO phenomenon, researching and investigating it, trying to see whether there was anything, as we defined it, of any defense interest.
And I always, whenever I'm reading a story about UFOs in England, I just go down paragraph, paragraph, paragraph. Oh, Nick Pope's involved. Okay, I feel good. That when you're involved, I know that somebody's taking it seriously and that there's an investigation going on. So it's not a big surprise to me that your name should pop up in this story I read a few minutes ago about the morning show that had the live video. They were just using it as a backdrop for the weather. When something should squiggle across the screen, for people who haven't seen it, describe that if you would.
Yes, what happened was this morning news program called Look North. What they do is that the presenter is obviously talking to the camera, but the backdrop is a webcam, and it's a view of the river running through the city with the Millennium Bridge in the background. This is one of our northern cities. And the newsreader, the presenter, was quite happily doing his thing, doing the morning show. And, of course, he's not looking at what's going on behind him. He's pretty much looking to camera. All of a sudden, something flashes across the screen and calls start coming into the program from members of the public, from viewers, saying, you know, you won't believe me, but I've just been watching the morning news on the BBC, and I've seen a UFO on your camera. So this story goes out. And the following day, they run it as a news story. And what they did is they put it on the BBC website. And this is where I saw it. At first, as you said in your introduction, I thought it was a bird. But the BBC themselves did a little bit of work on this, slowed the image down, and what you actually see is what looks like a cigar-shaped, small but cigar-shaped, rod-shaped, white object moving very, it's quick, it's moving absolutely in a dead straight line, and there's no flapping of wings, this isn't a bird, it's not an insect, it's something. I don't think we're, any of us, claiming that this is an extraterrestrial spacecraft. I mean, whatever it is, it's quite small, but it's interesting. And as I say, the provenance of this is not disputed. All too often in this field, of course, you see things on YouTube and you think, well, where did this come from? Maybe someone's photoshopped it. This is the BBC. They don't do that sort of thing.
Right, right, right. They're not that much fun. So, so in slowing it down and looking at it, you say you can confirm that it's not a bird. It's moving so fast that it's more like a missile, isn't it? I mean, the way it cuts across the screen like that.
I would almost say that a missile would be the top suspect in this, were it not for the fact that clearly we don't go firing missiles off over major cities, but that's exactly what it looks like.
Could it be like a what we would call a bottle rocket in America? Could it be, you know, like some errant firework?
I don't think so. This was, I mean, not that this absolutely rules it out, but this was effectively about 6:30 in the morning, and it didn't seem to be glowing in the incandescent way that something like that would. This was a solid white streak, as opposed to a fiery glow. Now, some of the other theories doing the rounds include...
Well, why don't you hang on for those theories, and we'll come back for them here at the break, because I'd be very curious about those theories. And also, if you would, you've agreed to stay for the rest of the hour and help me in this conversation with Michael Rowley, the man from Florida, who said that he's had several encounters. It would be handy to do that investigation live on Coast to Coast with Britain's Fox Mulder. And thank you so much for agreeing to the extra time tonight. I'm really looking forward to that. I'm a big fan of Nick Pope. I think he's awesome. Coming up next hour, too, David Sirita. Not to be missed, I'll be doing Sunday night on Coast to Coast this weekend. And we have a return of a guest who has been tracking mysterious runes found in the United States. He originally came on to talk about the famous Kensington Rune Stone, which is in which was found in Minnesota. But he's back to say he has an update. There's a new book, and he is out to prove the Holy Grail made it all the way to pre-Columbus America. And he'll talk about that and the runes that prove it on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, if you go to the website at coasttocoastam.com, you'll see the alien footprint photos. Michael Rowley and his family took these photos. We'll share this coming up in just a few minutes. We'll have Michael Rowley on to talk about his encounters at his home in North Point, Florida. And then also, let's get back with Nick Pope. We were just talking about the story we also have linked up in the news section on coasttocoastam.com, UFO invades a BBC breakfast show, and they have an unusual piece of video that got captured live, and we were just getting to the part where Nick was going to explain some of these alternative theories to what is right now an unidentified object that flies across the screen, and we'll get to that next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. So, Nick Pope, former member of the Ministry of Defense and a guy who used to be a spokesperson, didn't you, even during the first Gulf War? Is that correct?
Well, I did work during the first Gulf War, not as a spokesperson, but actually as a briefer. I was in the Air Force Operations Room, which is part of the Joint Operations Center in MOD main building. So, a fascinating job in its own right.
Oh, it is. I was trying to bring a little context. And then also, you mostly write nonfiction books, but I understand you have one novel that you put out about what it would be like in England for a hostile alien force to be discovered and how it would get handled. Am I summing it up wrong?
No, that's right. In fact, it was two books, Operation Thunderchild and Operation Lightning Strike. I decided, funnily, interesting that you just mentioned the Gulf War, because what I did was I mixed what I know about UFOs with what I know about how government and the military works in a combat situation. And I mixed the two, and I wrote a couple of alien invasion sci-fi novels. And the funny thing was that, of course, because of my position, even though these were sci-fi novels, I had to submit them for government clearance because,
right,
obviously I touched on things like strategy, doctrine, tactics, etc.
Well, and so I guess that's a question that comes about is, do you feel like when you get a UFO story like the one that was in the, captured on the BBC earlier this week, that this is an example of a hostile invading force? Do you get a sense of hostility to the UFOs?
Well, now, this is absolutely the $64,000 question. In government, in the military, in intelligence, we define a threat as being the sum of a capability plus an intent. That's how it's defined. Capability plus intent equals threat. Yes, there does seem to be a capability, because persistently these things are described having speeds and maneuvers that can outdo us. Intent, we don't know. So the way I would score this is a potential threat.
Okay. And so as you look at the video, and we've got this linked up at coasttocoastam.com, you look at the video from the BBC of this whatever it is that shoots across the screen in a very solid trajectory that doesn't appear to have any sort of contrail to it. It doesn't It doesn't have the characteristics of anything that I can tell just by, you know, my past experience. Do you get any sense of hostility about that video? And were there witnesses on the ground at the time that that video is being shot for the BBC that saw and or experienced something which would be informative to what ended up being shown on TV?
I didn't get a feeling of threat from that video itself. And just before the break, I was going to mention some of the theories doing the rounds. One of the theories is obviously what we're seeing increasingly these days, and particularly in Afghanistan, of course, is military drones. But the police, for surveillance purposes, have some very sophisticated little remote-controlled devices these days. And that's one of the theories doing the rounds.
Do they have any that can go that fast?
We don't know. I mean, again, for reasons of classification, of course, the details of some of these projects are not widely known. So this is speculation. Now, your question about the witnesses is very interesting. There's an appeal that's been made. Obviously, what we had was this bridge. Now, there were people on the bridge. There were people on the bridge. So an appeal has gone out in the media for anyone who was there at the time who may have seen anything, or even if they didn't see anything, to right. come forward and put their testimony into the public domain. So this we haven't got to the bottom of this yet. We're still making some inquiries.
Any chance it could have been a bug that just by the sense of forced perspective to the camera, a fast-moving bug gave off appeared to be, you know, more metallic or appears to be more of a some sort of projectile?
I've seen pieces of video footage where you do have a bug. I think it's too big and too iridescent for this.
Right.
If you look at the initial image before they slowed it down and things, I think it's too big for that. So that's not my theory with that. I mean, what of course this is reminding people of, I don't know if you recall, but there was a very similar story actually at President Obama's inauguration ceremony. There was a CNN camera, and very similar thing happened. Two of the presenters were talking. There was a webcam I think it was the Washington Monument in the background. And suddenly something flashed across the screen. Viewers started calling in. So interesting, this connection, CNN, BBC.
Right. And no explanation ultimately found for what shot across the screen there?
No.
Okay. Thank you. And I know that you will stay on that story, and whatever can be uncovered will. And whether it's on with me or George Norrie or George Knapp in the future, I hope that we come back and you tell us, you even if the American press doesn't cover the resolution or we don't get the link on time, you let us know, won't you, so that we can
sure
get
thing,
that information.
Sure thing, yes. I mean, I come onto the show from time to time, so I'm sure I can update listeners on that.
I'm a big fan. So, all right, so then help us out then. UFO expert Nick Pope will then switch sides of the table here and help me with our next guest. This is Michael Rowley, who is the subject of a UFO story, more specifically, close encounter story. Good evening, Michael.
Yes.
How are you tonight?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. You're talking with me, and this is Nick Pope, who's considered to be Britain's Fox Mulder. So we've linked up on our webpage the photograph. Did you take this of the print in the soft soil?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And what is it that we should see in this this footprint photo that we've got linked up at coasttocoastam.com?
Oh, it's a footprint of what I really actually believe to be is a dragon.
Okay. Tell me about dragons outside your home.
Well, tonight is the best night to call me because I've been having guests stay at my house, and I'm going to have to read some of the things to you that they wrote. In fact, I have a guest here right now that we were just outside. He saw something in the woods, and he's writing about it. he didn't sign anything, and he's not signing anything because, you know, it's not prepared ahead of time, but I'll be able to read it without his name.
Okay, well, tell me, when you say guest, do you mean you're not being colorful here or figurative? You mean you literally have guests in your house, and they also have seen things?
Exactly. I've had guests coming for a week.
Okay, and so you aren't the only one. You and your son aren't the only ones. Tell us, before you read us the new information, tell me and tell Nick and everybody listening firsthand about a typical encounter which you've been having at your home in Northport, Florida.
A typical encounter that I've been having, I've seen this dragon once. It's over, it's about 20 foot tall. I saw it two houses down in my neighbor's backyard. And it has an eyeball that's as big as a car headlight, but it's deep red. And it only looked at me for a second. My son, when we first moved here in April, we moved here April 8th, and just about April 14th is when he woke up from his sleep, and there was a tall gray, probably 9 to 10 foot tall, bending down, looking in his window. It was too tall, so I had to bend down a little bit to look in. And it said it acted like it had something in its eye because it was twitching its eye. But my son locked eyes with him, and then he noticed another entity, which he describes as a reptilian. It was hanging in a tree like a tree frog, and it was bobbing its head back and forth slowly. And it was watching the gray, which was watching my son. And he came out and told me about it in the morning, and I believed him, but I didn't. You know, I'm just starting, even though all this stuff has been going on, I'm just starting to be a believer. And so we blocked all the windows so he didn't have to see anything. He wanted a curtain. We didn't have any curtains up yet, so we got stuff. I went to the store and got these temporary-type plastic curtains and stuck it up and covered all the windows up with towels and this and that and sheets and everything else and barricaded stuff. I went out to check the door from my room at 1 o'clock in the morning. I didn't turn on any lights, and the back door wasn't locked. So when I went to check it, I pushed it open. And I said, whoa, not locked. So I pulled it and locked it and went back to bed. Next morning, I went outside, and there was this footprint in the ground.
Nick, what would be your first question if you were investigating the story with Michael Rowley and his family in Florida?
Well, I think it's absolutely fascinating. My first question, I guess, would be, overall, Michael, how did you characterize your response? Was it curiosity? Was it fear? Where in the spectrum did it fit?
For me?
Yeah.
Fear.
And with that thought now in mind, I mean, do you think this is hostile? Or do you just think that that's an automatic reaction for something above and beyond the normal human experience?
Yeah, normal reaction for something above and beyond the normal experience, yeah.
So how now? I think I've heard in relation to this story talk of the mutual UFO network coming in and things. How is the investigation being carried forward? Where do we go from here?
I am not working with MUFON anymore. The person that I was working with, we have a personality clash, so I'm on my own, and he says since I dropped him that MUFON has dropped me, but I don't believe that. I still get along with Mary Margaret Zimmer fine. And
well, let's leave last names out of it. Let me ask you about then what has happened then for the rest of this week. You said that you have had guests that have come there. Did you bring guests into your home strictly for the purpose of being able to have independent corroboration for what you're experiencing?
Exactly. I have a guest book that everyone signs and writes what they saw, and I don't tell them what the other people saw. So it's kind of like my little own scientific project to where I want to see if things match up.
All right. What are your guests telling you about what they're seeing in your home and around your home in Northport, Florida?
Okay, I'll just read them really quick. I'm not going to say their names, but this guy writes, red lights. Now, that's the same kind of red eyeball that I saw on the big, tall one. But there's small ones all around here, too, and they all have this red light for eyes. Red lights, noises. Here's another guy, red eyes, tall, long, bright legs. I actually saw this, too. It was part of a gray we could see in the woods. It's the tall one. And this young man, he was 18 years old. He could see the feet, and so did my son. It's like a chicken without the middle toe. It's like a V. They walk on V kind of shaped feet.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a great big bunch of these big Florida leaves in front of the top part of it, but we could clearly see the legs.
Well, let me ask you about that then, too. Why do you think it's happening around your home? Why you, and where are you in relationship to other homes that your other neighbors are, you know, either not or are they also seeing things?
I don't know if they're seeing things or not. I showed two of the neighbors the pictures and told them what I thought it was, and they haven't talked to me since.
Okay. But why do you think it's happening to your house? What is it going on around your house? Why?
I have no idea whatsoever.
That they would keep returning to your home?
Yeah, I don't know.
Nick?
Yeah, I've got a question. Michael, do you or your neighbors have any dogs, for example, and have they reacted in strange ways, in a way that might make you think there are intruders of whatever sort?
That's a good question. My neighbors keep their dogs in. They only come out once in a while, and I know that because they bark at me, and they don't come out very often. But they're not outside at night. But one of my guests last night brought his dog, and it ran into the woods barking like crazy right there where we see things, and he had to go in there and get his dog. It took him about a minute.
Okay.
But that was the only reaction of a dog. That's the only dog we've had here, and it knew something was in there.
Why did why did your son say that he thought that these creatures that are outside of your home could fly?
That's because the way the first evidence I have of that is my foot cast. It's got a cloven hoof, and the left foot, the toes are pointing to the left, so that means the foot and ankle had to be twisting to the right. And then you can see in the pictures there's a lot of dirt thrown up to the side. So with great force, this thing jumped sideways, but it didn't leave any other prints. And if it's twisting its foot to the right, causing the toes to go to the left, it's a really awkward position unless it actually turns and flies. So that was just my own first deduction of why it flies. And here's the other reason why it flies. Here was a guest, what he wrote tonight. He said, "I saw something flying over street, long, skinny, and fast. Then it was out of sight. Couldn't tell exactly what it was." And here's what his mother writes. "My son saw something in the sky as soon as we got out of our car. In the full moon." Now that sounds like some kind of weird horror movie. "He said, what was that? It was big, long, and skinny, flying real fast overhead."
Okay.
Okay, here's another one.
Wait. Let's get Nick has another question. Go ahead, Nick.
Well, it was an observation and then a question. The observation is that we in England over 100 years ago had a case, and I would urge Michael, yourself, and listeners to look this up. This is very interesting potential connection. Spring-heeled Jack. Interesting case.
Can you say that again? I'm going to
run
it down.
Spring-heeled Jack. I've often heard that compared to the American Mothman.
It's a cryptozoological mystery from our past here in Britain. But, Michael, some elements of what you're describing sound familiar, and I would urge you to have a look at this on the internet and see whether some of this fits. This is a mystery. Very famously, there was a cloven hoof. In fact, there were footprints found over a large part of the country, including over rooftops. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the implication was this thing had flown or, you know, immense leaps it was capable of.
Well, and that's where we'll have to end our investigation tonight with you, Michael, but look forward to further updates. So keep a camera nearby. Get video.
One more thing real quick.
Okay, we don't have much time here.
Huh?
We don't have much time here. Go ahead.
Okay. Heard sounds like wings beating, air, loud crashes and stomping sounds. Sense something around me. I also saw little circle-shaped lights. Wings beating air.
All right, well, keep...
All right, let you go.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate that. Make sure that you keep a camera ready. Maybe invest in a night, you know, vision video camera, too. They are everywhere, and it'd be interesting to see what you capture. Nick Pope, thank you so much. Couldn't have done that without you. And
thank you.
I look forward to talking with you again in the future. Keep up the good work, okay?
Thank you.
Nick Pope, all the way from England, former Ministry of Defense investigator into UFOs in the UK. You can link up to both of those stories at coasttocoastam.com. Grab my blog, too, while you get a chance to see those typhoon photos. And just how far can we expand our minds before they would pop? You'll be amazed next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.